be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char, and let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
Hey, Jim. Jim, if you can hear me, you're muted. You have to unmute your Skype mic. Hey, good morning, everybody. This is Mitch waiting for Jim. There he is.
Mitchell, are we good now?
You good.
All right. Thank you for catching that. My mistake. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm awaiting the arrival of my guest, Dr. Kevin McCarron, PhD, who is a principal investigator at the Korean Brain Research Institute, dealing with systems, neuroscience, and movement disorders. Comes highly recommended, especially by Giuseppe Vaffandulo, well known to this audience. While I await for his arrival, let me begin by explaining that as the states begin to open up, the Democrats are going bananas, where the mayor of Washington, D.C. has banned dancing and even standing at weddings. I mean, this is bizarre in the extreme. Red states like Florida, even blue New York, have begun reopening their economies and lifting coronavirus restrictions. Not so, however, in double-masking District of Columbia, where Mayor Muriel Bowser has issued a decree against dancing at weddings. At a news conference that went unnoticed by all but a few local media outlets, Bowser announced last week weddings can take place in the District of Columbia, albeit at 25% capacity. Additionally, she declared that standing and dancing at receptions would be forbidden as of Saturday past. A spokesman for Bowser reported the rule was put in place to reduce the spread of COVID-19 because when people stand and dance, their behavior changes. This is just about as absurd as it can get. Dancing was famously banned in the fictional town of Beaumont, Oklahoma, in the 1984 hit movie Footloose. Boogieing was also banned under pain of death by the Taliban in Afghanistan. and in several American towns and cities during the 20th century, albeit without the threat of beheading. So we could say the Taliban has come to Washington, D.C. Twitter users who caught wind of Bowser's decree ridiculed the Democrat mayor. Here's Derek Jones' tweet. "I'm so glad we have Mayor Bowser to protect us from the sinful ways of dancing or standing at weddings. Without her, D.C. might devolve into a cesspool of undulating arms and legs. All a pundit, reporters, you should start reaching out now to sources on the D.C. PD and ask for a heads up in case any officers are forced to break up a wedding reception for illegal dancing. I'd read the shit out of a story about that." Here's Groog MD, anti-wild hog activist. "The fundies taking over D.C. is probably the best thing to have happened to it." Sean Hannity, "Dancing canceled. D.C. mayor bans dancing at indoor and outdoor weddings in Washington, D.C. Absolutely unbelievable." From outside the Beltway, where restrictions are being lifted, the idea of a dancing ban still being in effect literally seems laughable. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis lifted all local coronavirus emergency orders in his state on Monday, calling it the evidence-based thing to do amid a decline in infections and deaths and the ongoing rollout of vaccines. DeSantis has emerged as one of the most vocal critics of lockdowns, mass mandates, and so-called vaccine passports, and despite a torrent of criticism from the media, has earned plaudits for the steps he has taken to protect Florida's sizable population of seniors while keeping the economy open. In New York, by contrast, Governor Andrew Cuomo embraced a harsh lockdown but ordered nursing homes to accept COVID patients with horrifying consequences, which he's done his best to conceal. Cuomo was portrayed in the media as the anti-DeSantis, but has since come around to the benefits of reopening. The consequences for the economy of both the city of New York and the state being devastating. Capacity restrictions will be mostly lifted there by May 19th, he announced Monday, with only large-scale gatherings subject to reduced capacity. Cuomo added the city will fully reopen, meaning literally everything back to normal, within the next 2 months. Unlike Florida, however, masks and social distancing will still be required indoors for the time being. This, of course, is all really quite absurd, all things considered, where DeSantis and other states in the union that have weakened their restrictions or never imposed them are thriving and flourishing economically in other ways, far superior to those where the Democrats have locked everything down. It's fairly stunning what's been taking place here across the nation. Meanwhile, we have developments in Arizona. The county has admitted to withholding routers demanded by the Senate subpoena. I mean, how bad is this? Maricopa County officials have not fully complied with the state Senate election audit subpoena, a decision made to avoid causing a significant security risk to data utilized by numerous law enforcement agencies, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office said Monday. How outrageous is this? We had previously believed the risk would be illuminated by redacting the law enforcement data on the routers and not producing it. But we were informed that redaction did not eliminate the risk, Deputy County Attorney Joseph LaRue wrote in a letter to Senate Audit Liaison Ken Bennett. We also learned that if criminal elements or others gained access to this data, it might compromise county and federal law enforcement efforts and put the lives of law enforcement personnel at risk. Have you ever heard such unadulterated bullshit? This is completely outrageous. You can always speak hypothetically about what might happen if the wrong people got a hold of the wrong data. But there is a subpoena that has been issued by the Arizona Senate to conduct this audit, and it's clear that LaRue and others in the state administration are refusing to participate because it would provide massive evidence of election fraud in Maricopa County. The letter from LaRue is prompted by Bennett's comments on Monday that Maricopa County officials are not in compliance with subpoenas signed by Senate President Karen Fan and Senate Judiciary Chair Warren Peterson. A judge ruled in February that the legislative subpoenas are valid and therefore, of course, should be enforced. If they are in violation of complying with a subpoena, they should be brought in and held in contempt of court and jailed, incarcerated, until such time as they come into compliance. The subpoenas resulted in several trucks full of Maricopa County election equipment, records, and nearly 2.1 million original ballots being delivered to Bennett at Veterans Memorial Coliseum for the audit, which began on April 23rd. LaRue's letter explains county officials had planned to provide the Senate audit team with virtual images of the requested routers, but are not yet sure it is possible to safely produce router information related to the November 3rd, 2020 election without compromising security for criminal justice agencies. Frankly, in my opinion, the only explanation is they know it's going to provide devastating implication evidence of the theft of the election. According to LaRue, putting those images at this time could also put citizens' confidential data at risk, including social security numbers and protected health information, even though, of course, in conducting the audit, they would make safeguards that nothing like that should occur. This is completely outrageous. As a result, the county cannot at this time provide the virtual images of routers. I will follow up with this when I know more. Meanwhile, if you thought that was damning, get this. Breaking. External devices with up-to-date vote totals were taken off-site nightly during the election by Maricopa County or Dominion employees. I mean, how bad is this? Very stunning stuff. Here's how it continues. Last night, Dr. Ward, who's been very involved in the ongoing Maricopa County audit, dropped a bombshell tweet that included a photo to show exactly what she's talking about. On December 14th, the Washington Times reported that Scott Jarrett, the director of Election Day for Maricopa County, told Arizona Senate Judiciary Committee the election was fair, dispelling accusations about widespread voter fraud or machine errors. Mr. Jarrett said the turnout was higher than it's been in 50 years for the battleground state's largest county, but he pushed back against accusations from pro-Trump lawyers and advocates that poll observers were kept out of the counting center. Mr. Jarrett also told the lawmakers recounts have verified that the tabulation machines were accurate in counting votes and pushed back against any allegations that using Sharpies disqualified votes. But did Mr. Jarrett find out about the external drives being moved every night to a safe location? It certainly is difficult to believe that the director of Election Day for Maricopa County knew about the external drives being transported to an undisclosed location every night, yet still referred to Arizona's November election as fair or accurate in December. This, of course, is completely outrageous. Now, the Democrats, realizing how serious the threat is of the audit that's proceeding in Maricopa County, have resorted to an intrusion by the Department of Justice. Now, bear in mind, the Constitution is very explicit about delegating to the state specifically responsibility for determining how their votes are conducted and how their electors are cast. The federal Department of Justice really ought not to have a role here. So they've got to shimmy something up. They've got to give themselves an angle. They got to try to figure out a way to intervene to stop what's going to expose a massive theft of the election. Hence, Biden DOJ steps in to put immediate stop to Arizona audit. The same organization that manufactured and ran the Russia collusion hoax and allowed for the 2020 election fraud is going to interfere with the Arizona audit. Do not forget that the Department of Justice did nothing as Democrats locked Republicans from ballot counting rooms and drove in vanloads of ballots in the middle of the night. Now the DOJ is stepping in to a state's audit of election ballots. Give me a break. The DOJ Civil Rights Division has sent a letter to Senator Fan, raising concerns over how the Arizona audit is being conducted. Yes, Democrats really don't want the audit to go through. Imagine that. The Department of Justice claims the Arizona audit is potentially violating election law. The Department of Justice expressed concern that the ongoing audit of 2020 election results in Arizona may violate election law and lead to voter intimidation. Get this. The department notified Republican State Senate President Karen Fan on Wednesday that it was monitoring the state's audit of 22.1 million ballots cast in Maricopa County in 2020, according to the Associated Press. DOJ specifically worried that outsourcing the audit to a third-party contractor may violate federal election law that requires election officials to control ballots for 22 months after an election. The contractor's intent to contact voters may also result in future illegal voter intimidation, the DOJ says. Such intimidation may also violate federal statutes on elections. Past experience with similar investigative efforts around the country has raised concerns that they can be directed at minority voters, which potentially can impact the anti-intimidation prohibitions of the Voting Rights Act. Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General Pamela Carrion wrote in the letter, "How in God's name would anyone know the race of a voter? They're counting the ballots. The ballots have no identifying information on them. You wouldn't know the race, the sex, the gender, the age of a voter cast. This is insulting beyond belief. But have no doubt, they are panic-stricken. They are absolutely going over the top out of anxiety that this audit is going to reveal the extent of the theft of the election." Let me just remind you, the very idea of Arizona going for Biden is a manifest absurdity historically. Arizona's been a very reliable red state. Just weeks before the election in Phoenix, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris made a joint appearance. There was so much enthusiasm for the Democratic ticket that the number of persons who turned out for their joint appearance was zero. None. That's right. Weeks before the election in Phoenix, no one turned out to see Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And they want to tell us that this pair received more votes than any other presidential candidate in history? This is so absurd on its face. You can certainly understand why the Democrats are totally distracted and unwilling to allow their elaborate theft to be exposed. Meanwhile, we have similar developments going on or threatened to develop in Michigan. Evidence voting machines had an unauthorized implant to circumvent security in Michigan. Matthew DiPerno, constitutional attorney in Michigan, revealed that forensic evidence shows Dominion voting machines had an unauthorized implant installed to circumvent its own security features. Surprise, surprise. DiPerno said forensic images obtained in December of 2020 show machines were connected to the internet and evidence of even remnants of foreign connections. "We're the only case in the country that's been actually able to look at forensic images," he told the War Room on Wednesday. That Steve Bannon show, December 6, 2020, coincidentally my birthday. We went into Antrim County and collected forensic images of Dominion's election management system. We've been studying them since that time. We've shown how insecure they are. Dominion wants to create this narrative, which is a false narrative, that their system is secure. DiPerno and his team say they have proof that voting machines used in the 2020 election can be compromised and votes easily transferred from one candidate to another, as many other sources have reported in the past. DiPerno said they uncovered a Microsoft implant installed on the machines that was not authorized by the Election Commission, which means the actual system itself would be decertified. You can use this type of program to go directly into the database and circumvent any of these terribly easy security features Dominion has and manipulate any system they have. DiPerno questioned the company's legitimacy when their machines could be so easily compromised. If you are a legitimate software company that would be used in a national election, there's no way you would ever program a system that works like this. DiPerno said it's a complete lie that his case in Michigan has no traction or evidence. We have plenty of traction in this case. The evidence we have is actual evidence. It's been verified over and over again. We put it into the court record. It's right there for everyone to see. Meanwhile, we have further developments that the Democrats are fearful of twin headaches that could cost the party their domination of the House in 2022. Get this. Former Democrat campaign chiefs are reportedly alarmed by the party's twin headaches, redistricting and retirements that appear primed to wipe out Democrats' full control of Congress in 2022. A growing number of House Democrats in battleground districts are either retiring or eyeballing higher office, vacancies that could upend a tiny Democrat majority in President Joe Biden's ambitious agenda, the New York Times reported. The two biggest headaches of any cycle are redistricting and retirements. And when you have both in one cycle, it's a migraine. Former Representative Steve Israel, Democrat of New York, who led the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee from 2011 to 2015, told the Times. Another former DCCC chairman, ex-Texas Representative Martin Frost, told Politico that although it's very early in the game, retirements are a concern. I would hope the party is taking them very seriously and setting out to recruit strong candidates, he said. The latest departure is Representative Sherry Bustos of Illinois, a previous Democratic campaign committee chair and a top ally of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Bustos announced last week she's not seeking re-election. Her win in 2020 was a squeaker in the district. Former President Trump won in both 2016 and 2020. Illinois also lost a congressional seat after the 2020 census, as the Chicago Tribune has reported. Problems have been exacerbated by two vulnerable House Democrats already facing tough re-election campaigns, reportedly starting to think about a Senate run. Pennsylvania Representative Connor Lamb and Chrissy Houlihan. According to Breitbart, there are Democrats who believe that with Lamb leaving, they would be unable to field a candidate who could hold on to the district next fall, likely costing them a seat. Representative Charlie Crist, Democrat of Florida, also won't be coming back to the House, the Tampa Bay Times has reported, with Crist announcing he'll run to get his old job as governor back, his third run for the spot, the news outlet noted. In 2012, after his tenure as governor, Crist switched from Republican to Democrat. Current Florida Governor Ron DeSantis of course, enjoys high approval ratings in the state. And in my estimation, no one is going to unseat him. Plus, a Democrat campaign committee has created an exit list of vulnerable Democrats whom Republicans can pick off in the midterm later this year. Meanwhile, we have Sidney Powell issuing a warning to all patriots. Former federal prosecutor Sidney Powell said we're living in a communist totalitarian regime during her appearance on Rose Unplugged this week. Sidney blasted the corrupt Department of Justice for raiding Giuliani's New York City apartment while ignoring Hunter Biden's hard drive and other Democrat crimes. Should any of us be surprised? We have the head of the Biden crime family now installed as president of the United States. Everything they're going to do is going to have a criminal taint. It's going to be biased. It's going to be corrupt. We can count on it. That is the present situation right here in the USA. And look at what's happening in Arizona when responsible legislators are seeking to find out exactly what happened in Maricopa County. And even the Department of Justice is intervening. We'll be right back after this break. Hopefully, if I'm fortunate, we'll be joined by my guest, Kevin McCarron, PhD. But there's much more to report. We'll be right back.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced.
Can you hear?
Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Oh,
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I'm very pleased to say that I have been joined by Kevin McCarron, PhD, the principal investigator at the Korea Brain Research Institute, expert in systems neuroscience, movement disorders, and related issues. He's done a great deal of research on COVID-19 as a bioweapon. Kevin, I'm simply delighted to have you here today.
Likewise, thank you for having me on and allowing me the chance to speak to your audience.
I'm just delighted. Why don't you give us a preliminary sketch? Sherry Tinpenny, as I am certain you are aware, has described the mRNA components of these mislabeled vaccines, which are really injectables and not properly characterized as medicine, as a perfectly designed killing machine. Would you agree with her assessment and kindly elaborate?
Let me take a step back from that. I think in order to approach what Dr. Tinpenny has said, it's important to understand what the nature of the pathogen is that we're dealing with. And once we can establish the groundwork or the theoretical basis and the molecular and genetic characteristics of this pathogen, we can then more clearly look at the potential risks that would be associated with the current gene therapy approaches that are being utilized as a vaccine. Perhaps if I could just ask you a quick question, what would your audience would view SARS-CoV-2 in what framework? It's all false. It's a
Well, there's a lot of debate about the reality of the virus per se itself. Many, I think, believe that the vaccine is the real pandemic, that the virus was created to create a stampede toward the vaccine, which is going to do immense damage, that it's going to compromise fertility. It's going to bring about a large number of deaths. It's going to be an instrument of worldwide depopulation. Now, Giuseppe has himself said he has had patients that were affected with this new virus. And I take it your research suggests that it was developed as a bioweapon. You can go anywhere you want. Just know there's been an extensive discussion on all sides of this on the programs here at Revolution Radio.
Okay, so I'll start with this as an introduction, that the scientific establishment around molecular genetic research into SARS viruses has a long history. It goes far back into American bioweapons research. It has significant resources given to it through essentially deep state organizations. And not so deep state, from Department of Defense, Defense Threat Reduction Agency, DARPA, the list goes on and on. These organizations, the NIH, the NIAID, Tony Fauci's Little Empire, all complicit in being part of a program that brought SARS-CoV-2 into existence. Now, where its exact origin comes from is up for debate, but I would put this, I'm a proponent of the Mojang Miner hypothesis. In 2000, around 2011, 2012, six miners were sent into a cave to clear it out for research. They were clearing out the back guano. Six of them became seriously ill. Three died. And this, we believe, is the precursor to what we understand to be SARS-CoV-2 today. Now, the key question, well, there are two key questions. One is, how did it make the jump from bat to human? SARS and MERS were considered to have intermediaries. And the second is, why are we seeing at a molecular and genetic level the signatures of a number of manipulations that are consistent with gain of function manipulations that would not be inappropriate in a dual use technology environment? Dual use meaning both civilian science and weapons science. We've managed to publish in journals now counterpoints to the original narrative, and this is it's a testament to how rotten the academies have become in the West, particularly the United States, that there was a concerted and very manipulative and nefarious network that tried to spoof the public into the nature of SARS-CoV-2 with calling it a natural spillover event. And this is where the hypothesis that it jumped from a bat to something like a pangolin, some in between, and then ended up over a thousand miles away from the cave where the miners were initially infected, and somehow this pandemic managed to emerge around one of the largest BSL-4 and virology institutes specialized in looking at coronaviruses, and who are receiving direct funding from all those state apparatus that I told you before, DOD, DTRA, NIH, NIAID, the list goes on, Health and Human Services, and it's hundreds of millions of dollars. The reason why there's such contentious debate is that there are people who have less than honorable intentions and ideals with how the people should be dealt with. Now, so with that, what I would say is that SARS-CoV-2 is a real pathogen. It's dangerously unpredictable, and it appears to be coming even more dangerous, where we can see health systems that are unable to keep pace, and in particular South America, India are prime examples of where it getting out of hand can cause serious problems. Now, in order to answer your question about Dr. Tenpenny's approach, I would take a little contention here with what they are doing. I'm very familiar with her work. There's too much emphasis on the vaccine. I'm not saying the vaccine is safe. The virus, they've got you in a pincer move right now. The vaccine, of course, is problematic. I will explain why in a few minutes. But the virus itself is not to be underestimated at the moment. Of course, there's the totalitarian creep that we need to be aware of that's come from all, well, name whoever. There's a long list of individuals and organizations that we could point at that are using this, are pouncing on the crisis and trying to use it. So to address the vaccine issue, I just want to make sure that my first opening statement was clear, and if I need to add anything to that.
Well, what's bothered me, Kevin, is my own research, and I published my first rather thorough discussion about this back in May at jimtheconspiracyguy.com, is that the demographic data, the mortality, doesn't show any spike because of the alleged pandemic. When I first began doing research, Ole Domegaard, who may be the leading expert on false flags in the world today, suggested I look at the European nation mortality tables, and they showed no spike whatsoever, even though the press was reporting that they were teeming with cases, hospitals were overflowing. We've had, of course, citizen journalists go to hospitals that were supposed to be loaded with coronavirus and find them virtually empty. We've had reports of staff having to be laid off. And we have had the more recent confirmation that it appears to be grossly exaggerated from a study that slipped through the cracks from Johns Hopkins, showing no increase in deaths in any age group from past years. We even have a report from life insurance by an expert on mathematical modeling and accountancy that the life insurance companies have not increased their premiums as a consequence, then that there's been no increase in the sale of oxygen tanks or IV drips and stand, all of which would be expected to take place if the coronavirus were real. I found that rather persuasive data, you know, suggesting to me that this whole thing might be an illusion, a psyop to drive people to take the vaccine, where it then turns out, as I mentioned before, that it is the vaccine that is the pandemic and has tremendous ability to kill. You're further.
So let's try and, because I would try to counter some of the evidence that you've tried to push forward there. We can exchange links afterwards to go through it. But let's see if we can agree on something. Okay, the number of vaccines or the types of vaccines that are being rolled out right now, the mRNA, Moderna, Pfizer examples, or the AstraZeneca adenovirus or the Russian adenovirus versions, they all do something very similar, which is encode the spike protein of the virus. Okay, and we have to accept, or that there needs to be some understanding and some middle ground that needs to be reached, where we can, if we agree that the virus is toxic, right, because it's forcing into your body a template through which your body will produce the spike protein that we find on the virus. Okay, they're a like for like amino acid copy of what we see in the wild type strain. Now, and this is why I want to try to emphasize that in both instances, there is danger, especially in the unknown, because we don't know the full extent of the pathology, right? But there's still, look, there are papers coming out this week that still are trying to argue whether SARS-CoV-2 is aerosolized or not. Well, okay.
Let me ask you just a couple of questions. As I understand it, the virus has never been isolated. If the virus has never been isolated, there can be no vaccine for the virus. The vaccines may treat some of the symptoms, but it cannot cure because it's never been isolated. The vaccines are doing overwhelmingly more damage and are a much greater risk than any threat from the alleged virus itself, and that, you know, the promotion of mask wearing, social distancing, and lockdowns has done tremendous damage, a reversal of practices of the past, where you quarantine the sick and the vulnerable, not the healthy. that this represents a massive attack on the economies of the world, ultimately for the sake of introducing the Great Reset, with which I'm certain you are familiar. Any of that is welcome for your comments.
Okay, so let's try to deal with, has the virus been isolated? So very, very early on, there were a number of voices that were amplified that tried to, and I will name names, Andrew Kaufman was another one that didn't suddenly emerge. It wasn't an organic rise. Rashid Batar, Judy Mikovits, all these individuals have, Judy Mikovits less so, but Andrew Kaufman did a particular number on the, how would you say, the those on the internet who are looking for answers and are somewhat skeptical of the mainstream media's information feeds. Okay, what he would try to argue is that in order to get the virus in enough numbers that we can do tests on them, okay, that we have to culture them. We have to put them through. They have to be cultured on seed cultures, so cells that we know they'll grow in. So monkey Vera E6 cells, human epithelial cells, they will grow in, and they induce something called a cytopathic effect. And all I've debunked Andrew Kaufman hundreds of times. He won't debate me. He'll run away every time. And they'll try to use sophistry to say that they can't isolate this virus, whereas, you know, you come from a science background, you know that we're not just relying on one probe to try to get to the to a base reality. There's multiple steps that we go through to say, are we looking at something that's an objective fact? And multiple labs across the world are entering into the GISAID databases, utilizing the same methods, the same pathogen with predictable mutation rates. This is science that can't be ignored, okay? And we're at the level where we can pick out from these cultures individual virions, and I'm sure you're aware that morphology drives function in biology, and we can see them and we can slice through them nanometer by nanometer, okay, and work out the genomics, the biophysics of the receptor binding. All of this stuff is standard laboratory practice and has a degree of precision and reproducibility today that the people saying that it hasn't been isolated, it's incumbent upon them to bring that information forward. I would say it's been isolated. It's isolated every day. And it's added to databases every day. New strains, you can track the mutation rates. All these things point to it being a real pathogen. And you know, the simple way to look at it is, if it was all fake, government institutions, defense institutions wouldn't be spending hundreds of millions of dollars in this research. And the reason I would say that we're in this mess is that they thought that they could get a jump on nature by going out into the wild. This was their program. Okay, this is the PREDICT program. They would go out into the wild. They would get a sample from a bat. They bring that sample back to the laboratory, and then they start making the changes to it. And something happened in Wuhan. What? I don't know. I don't know who's responsible. I don't think we'll never know the intent. But the clinical picture is clear. The basic science is clear. It's people's misunderstanding of the science that's out of whack here. And I'll just finish on this point. The moment that you can take a sample from a patient, you can culture it, even though you have to use live cells to grow the virus, because it's a virus, okay? It's an obligate parasite, it needs to do that. And then you can take that virus, put it into a monkey, and get the same disease, and we can identify the virus in the monkey, that's it. That's the game done with identification. And it's been done multiple times.
Well, that's pretty fascinating. I'm looking forward to having Giuseppe join us after the break. Where do you think things stand? Do you agree that the vaccinations, such as they are extremely damaging? That even for physicians to recommend them is a violation of the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm, and of the Nuremberg Code, that no one should be subjected to an experimental procedure without being fully informed of the risks and the hazards, as well as the alternatives, in this case, ivermectin, HCQ, and other alternatives. Where do you stand on the moral and ethical aspects of these questions?
The moral and ethical question is an easy one to answer. The vaccines have to be shown to be proven to be better than established therapeutics like ivermectin. Like, I'm not such a big fan of hydroxychloroquine. The data is quite clear that it has a very narrow window of efficacy. Ivermectin seems, from what we can tell, a much better, a more robust approach to treatment. Vaccines as a method for public health would be fine if they weren't being followed up with the totalitarian aspects that are following on as a consequence of these programs, which is the tracking, the tracing, all these factors have not been discussed in the same way that the vaccines themselves have not been approved. They've not gone through proper testing. Okay. Vaccines take years to develop. We need to know their interactions with other drugs. We need to know who's at risk. We need to build these profiles. They haven't done proper toxicological testing in animal studies. It was a case of, can they get an antibody response? It's a very narrow antibody response to this agent. I believe it will do what it says on the tin. I also think that there's going to be high numbers of people who have adverse events. I think that's very obvious in the news feeds if you watch them. It's been very much a case of a Gishkalop where before the vaccines came out, anything could be labeled as COVID up to 30 days after a positive PCR, but exposure to the vaccine, and even if you drop down dead 2 days later, they want to try and argue the white is black and black is white in this particular case. So there's very, very serious discussions to be had on multiple levels with the current state of affairs. You're dealing, people have to understand that they are dealing with a biowarfare, or not biowarfare, but a dual use agent, okay? And as a dual use agent, it's incumbent upon you to think about all these possibilities. With respect to the dead, there was a report out today from Washington State University that in fact has doubled the number of deaths. I haven't had a chance to read it, that have been attributed to SARS-CoV-2. So we've gone, they think it's being vastly underreported. And like I say, I'm not a lockdown fan. My pleas as this started was, I was an advocate for masks. I'm in Japan. Japan has done a very good job of stopping the virus from becoming endemic. It is here. My wife's office got closed a month ago. Someone in the office got it. We have a large Brazilian community. It's the P1 variant. But I think what happened was is that, well, you can, let's say, if you're starting to talk in terms of the World Economic Forum, these supranational organizations, and we can't ever fully be sure of people's motives. But I would say this, the proper response at the time would have been to immediately go to a wartime economy. That means that you close the borders, you keep open essential industries, and you make sure that the industries that aren't essential, those workers, because in this instance we're not having to supply troops abroad, are not being preyed upon by rent seekers and worrying about where their next paycheck has come from. That should have been the posture right from the beginning. It wasn't. You've seen massive dereliction of duty, and again, the standard ethical and moral frameworks that should have been driving public health decisions implode. One minute Americans were told you don't need masks, while at the same time, the NIH and all the Health and Human Services were appropriating every bit of PPE that they could get their hands on. It was a disaster from the beginning, and almost looks like a deliberate,
Kevin, we got a break, and we're going to be joined after the break by Giuseppe Vaffangulo, and I want to have a conversation among the three of us before we invite other callers to join us. So we'll be right back with our special guest.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope.
We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, with my special guest today, Kevin McCarron, PhD, the principal investigator at the Korean Brain Institute, Research Institute, who I'm discovering has views somewhat at variance with my own in terms of the research I've done. Kevin, do you think these vaccines are good or bad? Because I'm certainly convinced they're doing great harm. I also am not quite clear about mass. It seemed to me the mass was misguided because the size of the virus, what, 0.1 micron, is too small to be filtered by the mass. It can only filter particles of 0.3. In that, as Fauci and his colleagues discovered in studying the Spanish flu, that the overwhelming majority of deaths didn't occur from the flu itself, but rather from bacterial pneumonia infections, which are promoted by wearing masks. I therefore believe that mask wearing is part and parcel of an agenda to really take down the population of the world, and that they do not have benefits. I'm therefore, quite surprised but fascinated by your rather contrary point of view. Please elaborate.
Sure. There's a number of points raised there. And I think rather than going off on tangents with respect to masks, and let's drill down on the virus and the vaccines, right? So why would the vaccines be so dangerous? And like I say, it's important that you understand that the spike protein of the virus itself is not an inert protein that just latches onto a receptor in the cell. There are numerous epitopes on that spike protein that are highly neurotoxic. Now, why would we get these abnormal neurotoxic epitopes that shouldn't be there if we follow the phylogeny of the beta coronaviruses? And why we don't only get one, we get a number of these neurotoxic epitopes that are of serious concern that we're seeing the impact of in the literature, both in test animals and also patients. Okay, so I'm gonna continue to define the pathology of the virus, so then we can fully understand why the vaccine is so, it could be potentially so troublesome. Okay, so there is a region between, so the spike protein is sort of made of, I would call it the S1, S2 segments, and there are loops that join these segments, okay? And their position, if you look at the 3D conformation of the spike protein, there's one that sticks out like a sore thumb. This is what they call the furin cleavage site. I hope people have come across this. And this furin cleavage site is made up of rare codon insertions that that make the idea that it's emerged in some recombination event highly unlikely. Also, that particular sequence and the flanking sequences are synonymous with HIV GP120 protein, rabies neurotoxin, and something else that I'm missing there. Rabies neurotoxin, HIV, GP110, cobra, yeah, the cobra neurotoxin, the three. And these are all cholinergic antagonists. Okay, so I want people to understand this idea of cholinergic antagonism. There is also a second sequence on that spike protein that can also bind to cholinergic receptors. The reason that ivermectin seems to work is that it's blocking its ability to attach to cholinergic receptors. There's also a third highly or potentially highly dangerous and very suspicious site, which is the receptor binding motif and receptor binding domain that clamps on to the ACE2 receptor. Now, there's a type of analysis that can be done. Are you familiar with what a prion is and a prion disorder?
Yes. And it looks as though what we got going on here with these mRNA turn out to be manufactured the spike protein that leads to prion production. So this is another reason I'm very troubled. I'm very pleased to say we've got Giuseppe joining us now, by the way. So do continue. Go ahead and lay on.
So it's those free neurotoxic elements that people need to be fully cognizant of. Hi, Giuseppe. How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. So those free neurotoxic epitopes are crucial to understand. There are other issues with the virus as well, but for people to get a handle on what it is that they're dealing with, understand that they're under assault from multiple directions, not just Big Pharma and NIH, but also a Frankenstein scientific program that developed these pathogens in the first place. And so what do we see with the vaccine that appears to make it particularly dangerous? What do we keep seeing in the news reports? Blood clot, everyone. People are getting weird blood clots and clotting disorders as platelets are sort of chewed up by particular inflammatory factors. And there's a very logical reason for that, and that comes from this cholinergic antagonism. So both the virus itself and the vaccine has the potential to do this. Okay, now, orthodox scientists that want to tell you that you could take the vaccine, no problem, etc. I'm not even sure they know about these epitopes. But these epitopes are demonstrated in the literature, it's accepted fact, and the increased incidence of blood clotting is likely associated with these regions that target the cholinergic receptors. It's a type of antagonism, and like I say, it's similar to cobra, snake toxin, HIV toxin. And it doesn't require huge amounts to have an impact on autonomic system function. But we see the same symptoms in people who are exposed to SARS-CoV-2, the blood clotting disorders. This is huge in people who have been exposed to SARS-CoV-2. And like I say, depending on the type of studies that you want to look at, there's many where they'll show you the clots that they've pulled out of people that have been identified as having been infected with SARS-CoV-2. Now, the question is, which one is worse under the current circumstances? Both seem a bad decision or a bad state to get yourself exposed to. Which one is worse? Now, I take the view that there might be people, you know, cohorts in the population that need extra protection that a vaccine may confer. So, to give you an example, in Brazil, the government has asked young couples not to have babies because hundreds are being lost at various stages of the pregnancy beyond the initial phases, and that's from exposure to the virus. Now, if you tell me that you could, that guaranteed the vaccine will reduce that by 80%, that seems like a group that would seem sensible for saying, here's the option if you want it. There's so many groups that you could go through with respect to comorbidities, etc. I think of it as a tool, right? Like some people say, all guns are bad, etc. I just take a different view. This is just a tool, okay? It's an unknown tool from both the bio research labs, the dual use technology, but also from the pharmaceutical companies, okay? And it needs to have a grounded discussion as to what it is that we're dealing with. Okay, and this is I love the United States. I wish I was in the United States, right? I enjoyed living there. Sad that work took me elsewhere on a different path in life. And it pains me to see the US so polarized around this type of information, the misinformation with respect to lab leaks, the over pressure to conform to vaccination, the forgetting or the abandoning of tried and trusted ways of dealing with pandemics of this kind. There's all sorts that's wrong. Now, the question is, how do we get a handle on it so that we can...
Kevin, I want to bring in Giuseppe, who's joined us, I'm pleased to say. Giuseppe, I got to say, I'm in a bit of a quandary. Of course, I think the whole mask business is complete nonsense, doesn't do any good, does tremendous harm. I'm anti the vaccinations. I think they're a depopulation mechanism. I buy into Sherry Tenpenny's advisories. I think lockdowns have been a monstrous mistake. They've wiped out the middle class. And, you know, whether we're ever going to be able to come back is a whole nother matter. There's been all this exaggeration. There were 38 million cases of flu last year. We got fewer than 2,000 this because they're reclassifying flu as COVID. Help arbitrators sort out some of these issues, if you might, my friend.
Well, I'd be curious to get both your gentlemen's thoughts. By the way, Kevin, great to see you on Revolution Radio again, hopefully another of many times. The more I follow your prolific work, the more I'm really I learn a lot, which is a great compliment. And I guess I'd like to get both you guys' thoughts on, it seems to me the real villain is the Fauci, the totalitarian, authoritarian bent of the World Health Organization, of Bill Gates, all telling us just act like four-year-olds, obey us and do what you're told. There was I never saw any mainstream coverage of the scientific revelation of I forget exactly how the word is pronounced, the M minor incident where three died. That was never in the mass media. Mm-hmm. We never get any of actual scientific coverage of what's going on to allow us as adults to make reasoned decisions. And so I think that Jim and Kevin, if Americans especially were treated as adults, we wouldn't have this polarizing polemic now where anti-vaxxers hate vaxxers and calling them sheep and vice versa. And you've got experts like this fellow Peter Hotez saying that anyone who doesn't want to take the injection should be ostracized from society, perhaps in prison. There was a gentleman, Ishikoff, on the mainstream media saying the same thing. So what concerns me, one, why aren't we having an adult discussion about the real science? And two, what are your thoughts on this totalitarian bent that you will take this and you will obey and blah, blah, blah?
Jim, I don't know if you want to go first.
No, you go right ahead, Kevin.
Okay, so there's a number of points to address. I'll see if I can remember, because it's there was a lot there. Yes, it's a shame that there's been a dereliction of the science fraternity in providing a balanced, and that means scientists from all discipline, or relevant disciplines, looking at the evidence and coming forward of what they think is going on. What was patently clear from the beginning, and this revolves around the whole EcoHealth scandal, the fact that they were essentially gaslighting the American public, and they did it with two letters, one to The Lancet, where they got a network of virologists to all agree that it must have been a spillover, meaning it's natural, to publish a letter in The Lancet. The other was a paper called The Proximal Origins of SARS-CoV-2, which made some predictions about why it would be, what would indicate that it was a natural origin, and why it didn't come out of a laboratory. And the reasons in that paper were highly fallacious. One was that we wouldn't design a receptor binding motif exactly like the one that we see in the viruses that are in the genomes that are reconstructed. The second was this property of they're called O-linked. They're sugars linked by oxygen molecules, and there should have been these O-linked glycans at particular sites, particularly around this furin cleavage site, that they predicted would be there as indicative of having passed through an intermediate animal. This discussion wasn't had in public. It was these organizations that have received hundreds of millions of dollars, not only from the Chinese, but also the US. Like I say, I don't know if you want to call the DOD deep state, or defense threat reduction, deep state, health and human services, deep state. I'm sure they have deep state elements in them. Fauci, being a veteran of nearly 50 years in service, yes. 1980, that's the epitome to me of a deep state operative, right? Because he's there just controlling the programs. And there are so many linkages and so many deep networks that run back in time. And I'm going to take this time because I'm reliant on one individual who really does deep analysis. He was the lead analysis, Hewlett-Packard. His name is Mark Kulak, who's Atomic Live. I encourage everyone to go and look at his breakdowns of the networks on our side. Like, we're supposed to be the good guys, right? But like I say, we've been going down this process of this gain of function research, and there hasn't been a dialogue, or the dialogue has been very minimal. When there was dialogue was in the Obama administration, and I'm no fan of Obama, but what happened was that there was a bunch of experiments done where they got a flu, and they basically gave it a gain of function that made it airborne. It was at that point that the Obama administration said, we're putting a moratorium on gain-of-function research. And that kicked into gear the use of EcoHealth as a middleman for transferring money to China, where they would continue to do this research. And they've said they've got hundreds of these viruses in their freezers. The molecular evidence, the open source intel evidence, many threads lead back to there being something happening in September, October around Wuhan. And from there, we've seen this this progression. Now, if you're China, you can lock everyone into their house and you can squash the disease, I would imagine, pretty effectively, right? When human rights are low down on the list of priorities, they're able to get a much better control, you know. But there's also the fact, look, if playing out all scenarios here, there's a factor here that could be pointing to race-based weapons. Southeast Asia is coming off much easier. There's a Lancet report out which shows the Chinese are the least affected in a cohort in the United Kingdom of hundreds of thousands. Okay, Black and Middle Eastern people tend to get hit harder. The reason for that, we're not sure. But the fact that the Chinese or Chinese and Southeast Asians impacted less by this virus, and we make the assumption that, look, biowarfare research didn't stop when they pulled out the treaties in, I want to say that was Nixon, maybe. But, you know, in the early 70s, they decided to put a moratorium on biowarfare research. But there were there was ongoing research. Israel had ongoing research into race-based weapons. This is established fact in conjunction with South Africa. And these are, we are potentially looking at that type of technology right now. Whether it really is that, we have to do the investigations, but we're not even having the discussion. People are still trying to argue about whether it was a pangolin interacting with a Wookiee that passed it to, that traveled to Wuhan 1,000 miles away and suddenly had the virus emerge around one of the largest laboratories in the world. So that aspect has to come into the conversation. The issue around what seems like the totalitarian creep or I don't know what to, because it's trying to do public health measures like they do in Southeast Asia in the West, I don't think it's going to work very well. In the West, in Japan, everyone wears masks. People don't shake hands. It's a non-contact society, and it's ritualistic washing, and you don't take your shoes in the house. Right? It's that type of culture. Taiwan, the same. South Korea, the same. And it might be a consequence of their public health. And it's not like we don't have the virus here. It just doesn't spread like it is in the West or India or Brazil or Mexico. And it's a complex set of variables that really need addressing in a scientific fashion. Now, the problem has been in particularly in the US Discord, as I've watched it, was the signal boosting of those that have tried to argue, well, the virus has never been isolated. They tried to use a kind of sophistry and bait and switch to gloss over the evidence. There's the, well, the, you know, like I say, my kids have to wear masks all day. Am I happy about that? No. But you know what? There's little SARS-CoV-2 here. And we're in one of the hot spots of Japan. Okay. I think that asking or demanding people to wear a mask all day in, you know, difficult conditions. Look, my job, I had to wear a mask most of the day. I know it's uncomfortable. I know it's
Well, Kevin, you've got to know you're restricting oxygen flow. You're killing brain cells. I mean, the idea of having children wear masks is, in my opinion, criminally wrong. I can't advocate it under any circumstances. And I'm very disturbed that you're taking an attitude here as though it were somehow a desirable or preferable or appropriate thing to do. In my opinion, it absolutely is not. to return to the issue just said, to return, Kevin, let me finish. Yeah, I'm giving you plenty of time. In response to Giuseppe's issue, the authoritarian attitude and role being played here by the federal government is completely inappropriate. The federal government does not have a role here in dictating health choices by the American people. They can issue advisories, but they're making it out to be mandatory, and the governors who have followed in line are perpetrating tyrannical acts that are very deleterious to the population and, frankly, makes them complicit, in my judgment, in the depopulation agenda, where I'm convinced that Deagle's estimate of dropping the U.S. population from 330 in 2020 to less than 100 million in 2025, which they've now dropped to 67, is actually on track. And the fact is that the delayed effects of the vaccine mean most Americans are going to have trouble putting cause and effect together, though when you have people dropping dead just minutes after they take the vaccination, and we're getting more reports of that, they're beginning to get a more clear picture of what's going on. Let me go to Giuseppe now, and then we'll come back to you, Kevin. Giuseppe.
Well, I'd like to ask Kevin, he mentioned this gentleman, Mark Cusack, and what is that website? I'd like to explore.
Housatonic Live. Hey, like the Housatonic River.
Okay. Okay, we got the break coming up here. Sad to say, we'll take the break and then we'll continue our conversation with Kevin and Giuseppe. Stand by. We'll be right back. Sure.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Here with Giuseppe and Kevin. I want to continue with Giuseppe. Go further, my friend. We're going to restrict the conversation to the three of us today and not take callers, given the weight of the matters before us. Giuseppe, you're muted.
I'm doing that a lot lately. That's funny. I'd like to get Kevin's thoughts on... further along the lines of what can people do, since, you know, I don't trust Tony Fauci's scientific explanation of things. I certainly don't believe Bill Gates knows what he's talking about. What are some resources people can do who are intelligent and want to explore the middle ground of what is really going on here?
I think there's my approach that I've always tried to stick to is, right now we're in the middle of a very messy experiment, a very messy set of geopolitical factors. We can point at the usual suspects. What I would encourage people to do right now is, I've lived in the US. If I was in the US, I would be in Montana with 20 acres and 50 calibers pointing out in every direction. Okay, I'm not saying people have to go to that length, but here's what I think is a reasonable approach to take from now till we can come to a scientific and rational understanding of where to go next. What's the proper steps to take? First is just limit your exposure, right? Not only to potential viral sources, but also to people that would bypass your natural, your natural systems, your natural immunity, and stick you with a technology that would have you make this spike protein that we know is neurotoxic and is expressed in full by the cells that take up this vaccine. You're in a situation of over, I think it's 60% of the US adult population has been vaccinated. That's good enough now for the experiment. The others that want to sit it out, wait. Avoid getting yourself into a situation where you can be infected. Limit the infective dose. This is something that's very clear in the literature as it relates to the prion and encephalitic type, encephalopathy type responses. The lower the dose that you get, the more chance you are of being able to combat it and turn it around so that you build natural immunity. At some point, we have to come to an arrangement, I think, with SARS-CoV-2, right? I hope, right? I really hope that biology will get us there. But it's also a possibility that because of the unnatural nature of what it is that we're dealing with, and these corporations, these mega pharmaceutical companies, they might just have us, boxed in, and we've got two choices: get with their program, okay? And we know, like I say, there's a very interesting individual that you should follow that's linked to Atlantic Council and other think tanks. His name is Andrew Weber. He gets into a kind of delirium in one particular podcast. It's called 80,000 Hours. I encourage everyone to go listen to that man talk about how they have beaten the existential threat of biological warfare through these new technologies that they're going to roll out, meaning these new vaccine, well, gene therapy technologies that can induce a vaccine-like effect. We're in this situation where these have been big stakeholders that are reshaping the world. If anyone after the last year thinks the world is going back to how it was, you need to wake up right now. Okay, there's a massive reshuffling of the global order going on, and you can tie that into Klaus Schwab, World Economic Forum, all these people are connected to that at some level. Okay, we can track individuals of interest. So, you know, EcoHealth, Peter Daszak. There's another. So as the natural origin story has collapsed and imploded because there was this group of scientists across the world, very fortunate to be associated with them. They're called Drastic. And they've led the charge of picking apart the information to demonstrate to the world quite clearly that this came from a laboratory, okay? And armed with that information, okay, I would argue everyone to engage in the precautionary principle. Look after your own communities and your own families first, right? That means, you know, try to keep your little stores and mom and pops alive, stores alive. Right? Try to keep your communities alive as, you know, all the wealth is being picked off by these corporations right now. This is the way to get through. And I think it's a futile exercise to engage in overt demonstration. One, you're just exposing yourself to unnecessary risk. Two, this new system that's coming into place just wants your data. It doesn't matter what type of data, whether you're arrested, put in hospital, become a person of interest. It doesn't matter. They just want the information, and then it goes into all these pseudo-private defense contractors, and they start their online PSYOP operations. It's like I said, the United States is in a very perilous situation right now. You've got an ascendant China. You've got a Marxist insurrection on the streets of most American cities. The dialogue is highly polarized. And as a scientist, when I see the dialogue being polarized around such faulty science to begin with, when God damn it, man, you guys are in a position to really be able to push back when the time comes, right? And to see such like I say, they were brilliant, like I say, psychological operations that fractured this type of thinking. So people are talking about viruses not being real, they haven't been isolated, yada, yada, yada. And then they get taken down, and then they're easy to manage from an operational standpoint of these of all these different entities, whether it's the government entities, the supranational entities. They're all collaborating at some level. Okay, and how far and deep that level goes, I mean, that becomes a metaphysical question. But in the here and the now, make sure you've got 6 months of rice and beans and food to get through the winter. And in the winter, look, there's a phenomenon, right, people need to be aware of, called escape variants, that as they use these vaccines, which will constrain the immune response in a very particular way, the virus will adapt to get around it. Okay, and we might see all sorts of problems emerge from that. And I encourage everyone, try from now, there's enough people vaccinated to enough people that haven't been, to get through to the other side of winter, and then let's see how this thing looks. And if they if they insist on trying to tell you that you've, like I said, forget masks, forget all this. It comes down to, are they going to be able to track you, right? Try to avoid make it difficult for them.
I'd also like to interject that drasticresearch.org is the website Kevin was referring to, and it looks like it's got some excellent information added.
Yes. We've peeled apart the what was to be the official narrative, and I will break down for your listeners what that was going to be. And this all ties into Great Reset, et cetera, and the plans that they that these oligarch class had. And what they were going to try and do was said, look, here's the pandemic we've been predicting all these years, from SARS to MERS, et cetera. It was, you know, they've been laying the seeds and the groundwork for a long time. They were going to come out and say, look, you see, because, and literally it's linked to the climate change cause. I encourage everyone to understand, find out about a program called One Health, how it's linked to convincing people that these diseases are a consequence of our activity on this planet. Well, the diseases are a consequence of our activity, but that activity was these select scientists going to these bat caves, getting the sample, bringing it back to a laboratory, manipulating it with established techniques that are well understood in the molecular biology and the genomic domain. And then something happened. And something got out of Wuhan, and like I say, we don't know if it was salted, we don't know if there was a leak, we don't know if it was deliberate, but it was uncanny timing to happen just before the military games, okay? And you can't not look at the current situation and discount the possibility of this next generation warfare stepping up a notch. And Until we can negate that hypothesis, I would encourage people to make that their primary one, because it's the one that has the most severe consequences if we mess up this process right now. So we've managed to put them onto the back foot by disrupting their narrative that this was all about nature and climate change. You can go and find clips of Fauci saying, we're going to see more of this type of thing because of climate change. And this is all the push to push you into these smart cities. Oh, no, let's get something straight about these smart cities. Most people are in smart cities already. What they're going to do is just tighten the grip with respect to how they're going to be tracking you. And why wouldn't they use, you know, if there was some degree of planning and nefarious conspiracy going on, why wouldn't they use something that had a real effect that they thought that they understood quite well? And I actually, in that, you know, I missed a critical point that I wanted to make out, that them making... using these vaccines and producing escape variants for those that want to stay out and be the control group of no vaccine, the group that are being vaccinated could be producing ever more toxic variants that become more pathogenic to people who, you know, were they to come into contact with the natural virus, be okay. And we're in a very, very, very precarious situation right now.
Giuseppe, go for it.
Could I ask your thoughts on why do you believe that the scientists and the research leaders in the various big pharma entities producing either the genetic mRNA insertion or the more traditional route via Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca, or the Chinese or the Russian version?
Oh, those aren't the normal route. That's a gene. That's an adenovirus vector. Okay?
Right.
Those are gene therapy techniques. They're not gene editing techniques. They're gene therapy techniques. Okay. Right. There are distinctions.
Can I ask, my question was, why do you, basically, like you said earlier, they're all trying to do the same thing. Why did they all believe it was a good idea to do this?
Well, there's a, I would, like I said, I would defer to my colleague, Marco, who's Tonic Life, who's really done the deep dives into the networks and the guiding scientific philosophies and principles that brought us to this point. And but if I was to summarize it, it was there's a constant push within science that we always have to be moving forward in some fashion or other, and whether that's and it's a way of commoditizing it as well. And so, you know, there's a reason that there's a lot of pushback against something like ivermectin, because it's virtually pennies for treatment, whereas a vaccine, and if you have to get people onto this schedule of vaccines and passports and IDs, that's a big money maker. The fourth industrial revolution that they're talking about around this great reset, one of the biggest components of it is new biotechnology. I've been part of this thinking and domain. I've worked in it all my life. I know where it is that they want to go, and it's all about personalized medicine, understanding your individual genome and how they're going to manipulate you. And what they're doing is they're normalizing this idea of gene therapy approaches to give you this next generation of medicine.
Oh, just Housatonic is a river, H-O-U-S, like the word Houston. A-T-O-N-I-C, a river in Connecticut, and Housatonic Live is a YouTube channel, so I found it, and it looks fantastic. I'm looking forward to exploring it.
I gotta say, Giuseppe, I find Kevin's interpretation of this, genetic-based medicine a bit more optimistic. I think it's a clear depopulation agenda. They're serious about eradicating, 70, 80, 90% of the world's population or more. They want to reduce it to roughly the Georgia Guidestone, 500 million from where we are today, 800 billion. That's a big enterprise, but they're going about it, as I see it, in a highly aggressive fashion.
Well, Jim, I think, why can't it be both, especially if the depopulation takes place over, 10, 20, 30 years, so they get to milk the Goyim cattle slowly.
Oy
and
vey.
Oy vey, and they create the biggest the biggest bubble. The whole point of the Rothschild banking cabal and its minions is they like to create these bubbles, these enormous economic bubbles, where they inflate it and then they institute a massive wealth transfer. And I've read what if scenarios that if this vaccine scenario continues to, well, it's not a vaccine, genetic experimentation injection scenario continues on, that it's going to make big pharma so large and so profitable, make Amazon look like a corner store. So why can't it be both, Jim? It makes more sense to bleed people as you're killing
test,
them slowly.
Test, and big data. This is what we're moving into. It's the big data domain with highly in-depth understanding of the subject that's receiving the intervention. Okay, if they wanted us dead, Jim, they could do that easy and just bulldoze us into pits. Okay, they're making this medicine for a reason. Okay, and here's something that I agree on with Mark in particular. There's one equalizing factor between the uber rich and us peons at the bottom, and that is that we get about the same time on this earth if we're generally sensible to ourselves. And these people are looking for life extension technologies. Now, in order to really, really nail those technologies down, you want to be able to testing people in controlled environments, okay? And, like I say, get people used to the idea of these new technologies with respect to, vaccine programs. okay, that they're going down the pathway in personalized medicine.
They can't just bulldoze us into pits, because then everyone would see what's going on, and you got over 130 million armed Americans. This is why they're trying to take away our guns, our ability to defend ourselves. So they've got to come up with a scheme whereby we assess in our own annihilation, thinking we're doing it to benefit or protect ourselves and our friends, and it's a good thing for us to take these vaccines and so forth. Plus, I can't imagine why anyone would discount what Deagle is projecting. This is monstrous. This is a decimation of more than two-thirds of the U.S. population in 5 years. This is not drawn out over 20 or 30. This is 5 years. And they have dropped the estimate, Giuseppe, from 99 million down to 67 in 2025. I think that reflects their belief they're so successful, and that those who are vaccinated are going to be, as it were, contagious. We have that charter school, a charter school down in our private academy in Florida that won't let anyone who's vaccinated be on their campus. And I'm wondering whether that might not be exactly right, that the vaccinated are going to be the typhoid Marys of our time.
Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Well, I was just going to say, Jim, Kevin's earlier point about racial-type bioweapons makes a lot of sense to me, because I don't think that the oligarchs and the plutocrats want the world smoking rubble. They want this transfer to a transhuman, big data, easily controlled totalitarian system, a bad sci-fi movie. And I think that the bio, especially the racial profiling, because even look at what the American government is doing the last couple of years, trying to make the majority population of decent, law-abiding, sensible white people of European origin into the villains and the great white supremacists and white nationalists. I think everybody, if you're in your country, should be a nationalist, not this globalist hooey. And then empowering these hyper weaponized minorities. So you've got, let's say in America, there's 2 to 3% of the LGBTQ WTF community. Well, the weaponized part, the bearded lesbians, the violent transgender, they're only like 1% of the 3%. And same with the violent Black Lives Matter, that 13% of the population in the United States is Black. 81% of that is working class or above. Why aren't we focusing on that? But this is very sinister every way you look at it. And I definitely believe that the most easy and convenient way to achieve those Deagle numbers is to make it look like it's SARS-CoV-2 or Corona 2022 or whatever they're going to blame it, when the bioweapon is in the vaccines. That's what it seems like to me.
Me too. That's my take as well.
Both are bioweapons, but one doesn't make the other mutually exclusive. Both are dual-use technologies. And anyone who tells you they know what's coming down, we know what's going on with respect to long-term effects, is lying to you, okay? And that comes from these free neurotoxic elements that I was talking about, because there is this prion component, and prions take time. But what the data within the preclinical, basic science, the animal studies, okay, rodents exposed to humanized mice, exposed to SARS-CoV-2, develop encephalopathy and are dead within 14 days. Non-human primates exposed to SARS-CoV-2 develop even asymptomatic or not severe infection, develop all the signals of neurodegeneration, which is the buildup of Lewy bodies in the brain. Now, this is from the virus, okay? Now, Is the vaccine going to do the same? Well, maybe one shot might not do it. Two, I don't know. You'll get these acute effects. I think the acute effects are very well established right now. We understand that people are going to get them. The question is, what happens if they're going to say, okay, you're going to need booster shots every year now? And they just keep adding and adding these the recapitulation of this spike, and it begins to degrade your central nervous system. There's no safe level of prion, scrapie-like prion in the central nervous system. Right. Look what the UK did to remove it from the food chain with respect to beef. Okay, it ripped everything out and started again from top to bottom, and they were strict on when cattle were culled, how they dealt with rendered meat, etc. And we yep. probably need something approaching that level right now. Yep. As we understand what the virus and the vaccine could do.
Kevin, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. Giuseppe recommended that you join the program, and I'm very pleased. We certainly had a fascinating exchange. Giuseppe, would you like to add a final word of your own?
Oh, I'd like to thank Kevin and hope he returns, because he brings a level of scientific acumen that we do not have access to typically. I mean, in America, we're listening to either vaccine zealots or vaccine haters, and I want to be in the middle scientific ground. So thanks again, Kevin, for coming on the show.
Yeah, it was just terrific. And Giuseppe, thank you for joining. It's been really a fascinating exchange. Thank you so very much. And everyone out there, thank you all for listening.
Thanks, Kevin. Great
listening to Revolution Radio.
Como va? This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage.